Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
What's up, everybody? Thanks so much for listening, and as always, we really appreciate your support here on the pod. You tuning in regularly makes this all possible. Your ears mean we get the sponsors and keep this thing free. And you spreading the word and making them nice reviews on iTunes means we get more ears on the pod. So with that quick reminder that I haven't done for a little while, remember to rate, review, and subscribe to the pod. It helps us attract awesome sponsors and the most badass guests for your listening pleasure. So do it, do it, do it. Now, I know you're fiddling around your phone right now. Show Hugh off the record a little bit of love, man. Okay, you know how things we do. Business up front, party in the back, just like my boy's mullet. And this dude has been the talent behind many, many a party. DJ Crust is a badass drum and bass producer and DJ, one-time member of the legendary Represent crew, along with our previous podcast, DJ Die. So check that one out as well. Now, he's still making music as well as bringing the chill to the party these days with his CBD oil venture, which is something I really am passionate about. So it was great to talk to him about that as well. So check it out, yo. One cool motherfucker, DJ Crust. Okay, yeah, we're recording, man.
So, okay. Yeah, so a friend of mine said to me, right, he said that, so cannabis is canna's canine.
Yeah.
Bis, bi, is two dogs. Two dog star system. It's a Sirius star system, yeah. Right? So his logic was that whoever seeded the planet brought one plant that does everything.
Okay, so this is the supposition that the planet was seeded,
yeah,
with humans and with, yeah, everything else.
And so, but the one plant that's the medicine, the clove, you can use it for right on.
Yeah,
it's used for everything. You know, yeah, they, back in the day. So when you study it back, the Chinese were the first to, you know, to write about it in history. They were using it to heal their soldiers in war. The Vikings were using it for labor. The Egyptians were using the papyrus paper as paper, in, yeah, hemp paper. Now it's been used as, I mean, where do you want to go?
I mean, it's used for fuel, yeah, biofuels and all.
Yeah, Henry Ford used it for the first Ford, mm-hmm, was made out of hemp.
Yeah.
It ran on hemp as well. Hemp is 10 times stronger than steel.
Yeah.
So whoever gave us this plant, right,
jumps in. Be it Jesus or someone from outer space, it means a lot. That's the thing. It's crazy.
I think it's like next level when you really, really break it down. Because like you said, we've got the receptors in our body, mm-hmm, that it didn't take a genius to figure out. We got the same receptors as in the plant. It's got to be healthy for us.
Yeah.
And so there's been tests on it.
Because I know someone said to me, hey, but that means we have receptors for all types of shit. But we don't.
No, we don't.
That's the thing. We don't have receptors for alcohol.
No.
You know, we don't have receptors for McDonald's. Whatever. Cannabis as a CBD receptor, yeah, in the human body. That's, yeah, what's like.
And in its proper form, it is a medicine. Like when you really break it down in its proper form, it's a medicine. So if you,
well, it's an analgesic as well, just if topical, if you put some on like a cut,
exactly,
your cut gets better, yeah, rather than, you know, it's also anti-inflammatory, yeah, and all that. Yeah,
it is deep. I mean, that is a whole other conversation in itself. You can go really deep and study the science of it, yeah, and how it affects the human,
well,
body.
Well, I do want to talk a little bit about it because, I mean, when you were the first dude that actually got me into CBD, and it was by mistake.
Right.
You were over at Dye's house, and Dye had some, and I was like, hey, I'll try it. And you walked in, and I was just, and you came in the room, and I had the dropper over my mouth,
right,
and I dropped must about 10 drops or whatever. You're only supposed to do like two or whatever, yeah, to get, yeah, the effect. Yeah. And you're like, yo, man. I was like, what did I just do? Because you're going to be very chill. And I was like, is it going to affect me like high wise? Or is it? And it didn't. It just made me, yeah, feel all that little static that goes on in people's, yeah, brains nowadays. It just kind of quieted, yeah, a little bit. You know, and it was unbelievable. But then I found out you had this company, and it, yeah, blew me away. You and Sophia,
yeah,
I know that you guys have been doing this for a minute, right?
Yeah.
How is it having a business doing it, though? I mean, is the government cool with it? Or are they kind of, like, sketchy?
We've seen a drastic shift since we started. I think we've been doing almost 4 years now. In the beginning, when we started, it was really like the Wild Wild West. There was no regulations. As such, there were sort of laws that sort of governed, you know, the legalities of it, but it wasn't specifically tailored around exactly what CBD was and the nature of it. And I think what happened, because it blew really quickly, you know, stories like Charlotte's Web about the young girl who had this epileptic seizures, that spread like wildfire on the underground, and then people were starting to figure out, well, this thing is non-psychoactive and it's non-addictive, you know, and it's got no side effects. I mean, that's really...
It ticks all my boxes,
yeah,
man.
Yeah, it's really unheard of in the medical world, right? Yeah. We've never really heard anything like this. And when we heard about it, we were fascinated. We thought, right, we want to take that as a preventative, and we thought people, our friends and people in our community, would want to do the same. Mm-hmm. What we found was the complete opposite, that people who were really, really sick, you know, started to hear about it, and they were being let down by the mainstream and medicine. One person we were dealing with was on a ridiculous amount of medication, and they started taking CBD, and it just reduced the medication.
The symptoms of what, you know,
And so what we saw was this relief that people could actually stop taking so many medicines that they were getting for the symptoms of the problems in the beginning, and you know, there was this, you could just sense that there was this big sigh of relief where people actually were getting something that wasn't doing them any harm. And that was, and for us, when we started to read these stories, it really, really woke us up and made us think, wow, you know, there's people out there who really need this. You know, there's people out there whose lives are being changed by this plant that grows, the hardiest plant in the world that grows anywhere. And it's like, you know, and for a while, it blew my mind, and I really couldn't comprehend what was actually going on. Like, this plant is really doing this thing for these people. And, you know, and over the years, what we've saw, and I think what's happened is that 2 years ago, when the whole Colorado green rush,
I got friends out there, man, it's crazy.
When that whole thing got the green card, literally the golden pass, the pharmaceutical companies saw 50% reduction in their medicine.
Yeah, they didn't like that.
And they didn't like that. And England saw that, and the pharmaceutical and the medical fraternity just freaked out. All of a sudden, they jumped on it. They realized what goes on over the pond surely comes here next. And so they
big pharma is international, global bullshit. So you could see how I started seeing things like CBD's harmful, or they started kicking back up that Reefer Madness nonsense. Exactly. They're ratcheting that propaganda back up, and you're like, why are they people freaking out? I mean, it's literally not getting you high, it's not addictive. Oh, I get it, because you're cutting into that market share just incrementally is gonna, you know.
Well, you have to check it as well, like the crop itself is a 3-month turnaround. It's hard to compete with that
in a 12-month year, a 3-month turnaround. And the human has receptors for it.
It's you can see, really, you just do the maths. They can see where this is going. They want to control it, and so they've put themselves in the middle and regulated it, and so these new laws have come in, and they've said, you have to do this, you have to do that. And it's been, we've seen, you know, it really adjusted. They came in heavy-handed and threatened everybody, saying, you have to do this, you know, and overnight, it is a real shame, but overnight, the industry halved, because a lot of people didn't understand the laws, didn't really understand what type of CBDs they should have, or strengths, lots of people panicked and just shut up shop, because they were threatened with closures and fines. But they were serving people. They had customers. And these people, in the time that we were living in, these people set up their own businesses and were feeding themselves and helping people. Mm-hmm. And overnight...
Well, government intimidation is going to happen, because all the money that these politicians get from big pharmaceutical companies... I remember when this GlaxoSmithKline building went up on the Westway.
Right.
All shit kind of changed, man. I mean, you could see the as far as them putting money into an economy and money into communities, especially when they do like stuff like that in like West London, that put a lot of people into jobs and stuff.
Right.
They have the sway, and I just think, I mean, you know, it seems like back in the day in the 70s or whatever, you heard those stories about how cigarette companies bought trademarks on Panama Red and Maui Wowie and all the names of pot and stuff like that. So if it did get legalized, they would have the copyright and be able to sell it. You know? So they were covering their bases. Have you seen big pharmaceutical companies starting to do research with CBD and trying to get in on it?
Yeah. What we saw when we were researching, we saw patents from the American government that go way back to the 40s where they were...
They've
been using it to test on cancer patients. So they've known that CBD has an effect on cancer. They've known it since the 40s. CBD, doctors in the 40s and 30s used to give... they call them cannabis cigarettes.
Mm-hmm.
So we know CBD is a bronchodilator, which means if you've got bad chest or asthma, it opens up your airwaves.
Pot used to have a lot more CBD in it, and it was engineered out because it kept people from getting really high.
Yeah.
Because there's a balance in that plant as well that you have to understand. People think of the Reefer Madness propaganda, especially like my mom, who could probably use a little CBD in her life. And I'm literally doing these podcasts about it so I can give her a little bit of information. Say, look, mom, it's not just me who smokes pot occasionally selling you it's good. It's not about the high. It's actually what this plant
medicine.
Can do. Yeah.
Yeah, it's medicine.
So I think, because a lot of people also argue that, it's not been tested. It hasn't, CBD hasn't been tested, but as you mentioned before, there's for thousands of years, people have been using it as a topical analgesic, an anti-inflammatory, a pain reducer.
Yeah, we know how good the mainstream media is, and when they want to really get into your ass about certain subjects, and they've got, when they control the means of communication, they can say anything. We know what Edward Bernays did for propaganda, and so we're seeing that again. It's a witch hunt, and. Back in the time when the doctors were independent and they could prescribe, mostly organic, healthy, plant-based medicines, we saw how the industry shut that down and you had to get a license to practice.
Yeah, yeah.
And if you practice the quackery, you wouldn't get a license. And so that's how they control it. So you had to go to their facility, study their magic.
Right? Yeah. Yo, you want to be a witch doctor, you're going to be our witch doctor.
Yeah, right? Yeah. And then you study their magic and then you prescribe. We've seen where that's gone. We've seen, in the last sort of 70 years, the worst epidemics of health that the planet's ever seen. It's ridiculous. So we know, that this is a viable threat to the establishment's ideology and control system. The cat's out the bag, though.
Yeah.
That's the good thing.
Yeah. I mean, it is one of those things you can't put the cat back in the bag. You can't say, that didn't just happen. That epileptic person is now cured from epilepsy. Now, I know somebody, I'm going to be talking to her, and she told me about her sister, who has a really, really super bad epilepsy, that might start taking it because she saw what happened to her sister, who didn't have, she had mild epilepsy, but she'd have seizures, bro.
Mm.
And for something as we say, as benign as CBD to actually keep people from having brain short circuitry, that's amazing. And that's why I think stories like that will push the envelope out where people can't, you can't actually say it's quackery and stuff like that. Now, if you've obviously jumped through all the hoops that the government's thrown at you, right, which is, admirable, because I don't have patience for that shit. I mean, because I know how the government can intimidate people into feeling that, maybe I'm doing the wrong shit. Maybe it's going to fuck my family up if I keep doing this. And
I would say Sophia is amazing. Yeah. She's the real engine of the business. She's the one who's really sat down and focused and really been, the one who's been able to sit down and look at the community as well. So she's really great at networking and meeting all the right
she's
people.
Awesome.
And we have been really fortunate that we've met some amazing people who have been sort of mentoring and coaching us and really kind of helping us understand the laws, because legalese is a joke.
It's there to confuse the regular human being. Even a very astute, smart human being is if you don't study their magic, you don't know what they're saying.
And so we have been able to really, not panic. If something really drastic happens, we've got two or three numbers we can call and find out exactly what's going on. And that's been one of the key things that's helped us just really, stabilize in a moment of excitement when everyone's saying, this is going to happen, this is going to happen.
Yeah.
We're like, okay, well, what we know, we've got contingencies in place. If this happens, can we go there? If that happens, can we do that? We've got a core base of customers who rely on what we have.
Yeah.
And so that's our priority, to really make sure that when they call, it's there for them.
Yeah, and I think that's great.
Yeah, and we've got that supply chain worked out. Everybody's in the community is really like working together, yeah. And they understand the bigger picture as well. So
you're even going up to Leicester with it, because my boy Frankie.
Yeah,
because I mean he used to suffer from a little bit of anxiety, and now he's loving it. The CBD's is helping him out grandly.
So here's the real sort of, you know, the other side of the spaceman ideology about CBD. The real grounded stuff about it, though, is so amazing. The hemp plant renutrients the soil as it grows. So wherever you grow it, it renutrients the soil, right? It cleans the air, right? There's no waste in the plant, right? So I'm like, more people need to grow it.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think that obviously this has been one of those big conspiracy stories over recorded history. If you look back, this plant was used so much, and a lot of people cite William Randolph Hearst in America kind of outlawing it because he owned a bunch of forests and he owned a bunch of newspapers.
Yeah.
And he wanted to use wood pulp and not hemp pulp to make the paper for his newspapers. And that was initially how Reefer Madness got started. And he's talking about jazz musicians having sex with white women and shit like that. And it was like, but the way they went, I know it's no, but the thing is, it's just you could see how fucking ruthless and awful human beings can be just for money and the greed aspect of it. I mean, you know, it could have been easily the other way around, where they could have been, no, we're going to go all out for cannabis, and probably the planet would have been a better place.
Yeah,
man,
health of people. You know, I always think, you know, it must be really difficult to hold things back. You must use so much energy and resources.
Yeah, and negative energy, too. Yeah. That's the crazy shit.
You know, and you could imagine, like, if we all cooperated, we'd be sweeping. We'd be actually traveling. I think we'd probably travel the stars now if we all cooperate and go in the same direction.
Those movies where you see, like, what was it, Bruce Willis went to that asteroid and poked a hole and blew it up? How the whole world was watching on the TV and you were like, you felt proud? Like, when I was a kid, I saw movies like that and I'd be like, oh, the whole world's fucking coming together. I felt proud of being a human. I was like, yo, this is some shit we got here. And then we get divisive and bullshit. But also I want to just get with the website of AMMA Life. So
yeah, so www.ammalife.co.uk.
Yeah, and you ship everywhere in the UK. So
yeah, we go all around. Yeah, we ship most places in the world.
Yeah,
But definitely all Europe is covered.
Yeah, it's. I mean, I'm a customer of yours. I think it's great. I get the 30% paste in case anybody wants to be like me. the Huey Signature Series. But also, I wanted to talk to you about music and stuff like that, because when I was hanging out with you and Die, you guys were making music. But then I saw you even before that when you were back with Ronnie hanging out. Was that at the Massive Attack gig?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That was crazy. Yeah, that was a great little show.
Yeah.
So that must have been, what, about a year ago you guys started working together?
Yeah.
Again? Well, I mean.
Yeah, I mean, it's the full cycle thing came about. I mean, I was not in the wilderness, but I went and started doing coaching.
Yeah.
So I was doing
the
music.
We should talk about that too, yeah.
Yeah, so we did the whole full cycle thing. We did the whole represent thing. And then, you know, the body was like, hey, you need to chill.
So the body does that, man.
Yeah. So after, like, you know, 7 years of just continually going on the road and traveling, I just, there was nothing left. You know, I'd sit in the studio and nothing would come out. And I think for me, that was really hard. I mean, for any musician, that you made your living and your passion was that, and that's what set you out on your journey. And then you're actually sitting in front of, you know, the thing that you really love and nothing's coming out.
We're in your dope studio too, by the way.
Thank you.
There's some Novation, right?
Yeah, we got the Novation, we got the Arps and the...
Oh yeah, you got the old school Jimmy Jams. Yeah. Fast has a lot of those. I'm like, you plug those in, he goes, nah, I kind of got virtual synth now. Whatever.
Yeah.
But when we do albums, which Criminals are doing a new album too.
Oh, really?
We're just almost finished with it. So, and then we're doing another Mimosa, which is like some covers and some retakes on our stuff, like, and a couple originals. But then we're doing an all original album next year.
Well, if you need any help,
yo, I'm just looking around like you might have to
help, man.
Well, dude, like when I get my new joint going,
hey, bro, I've just seen Roland's bringing out the new SH-101.
Nice.
And I thought, I'm getting that. There's about four new analog keyboards I'm gonna go crazy on.
Yeah, man. I there's something about that stuff, and you know what's cool? I've kind of rediscovered all the old keyboards because my son, I gave him my old X, but not the new X50, like that little core joint. and it has all the voices in it. And he clocks like old organs, and he's playing like old, but he goes for the old sounds. He doesn't go for the, he goes for like these really cool, like arp. He like pulls this arp string ensemble up, and it's like, what? Yeah. But it's all about that stuff, man. I guess people want to have, especially when it comes with, I think, like computer-based music, because I use Pro Tools, and it's like a lot of stuff's in the box, kind of we say. They want to have the freedom to do it in the box, but then, like, they always go back to the shit that got you there, you know?
Do you know what? I think what it is that you like, we like touching the stuff.
Yeah. You know, there's a little, yeah, there's little roll-out keyboards and felt, it's like, I don't know.
You got to sit there and just touch it. And you know, my thing, what I used to do, you know, I used to just sit in front of the keyboard and just meditate with it. Mm-hmm. And just sit there for about 20-30 minutes and just meditate and just close my eyes and just let my fingers run over the keys and then just see what happened. You know what I mean? And I love you know, I love the computer, I love the box. You know, my thing was, it's definitely made it convenient and easy. It's made music look great.
Yeah.
I think that's the trap sometimes, because
the waveforms on the Pro Tools, ooh, that one's green.
And you want it, and sometimes you get trapped in the way that it looks. And I think my journey coming back to music and the where I've been is like, I've been studying film. I really got into film, and I thought, I want my music to sound like a film. So when I talk about music, I keep saying I'm making films now.
Yeah.
I don't think about it as making music, and it's not like I'm watching the screen. What I'm doing, I'm listening to the way films put together, and where you, how plots work.
Yeah.
You know, like, you know, like where the story arc goes. And you know, when you see a really great film, right?
Yeah.
You don't know what the fuck's going on.
Yeah.
And that's what I like, and that's my whole thing. Is like, I don't want you to, you know, I don't want my music to be that predictable. Yeah. I want you to listen to it and think you know what's going on. Then all of a sudden, this fucking trap door comes out, and a mad accident comes in.
Yeah.
And so, I've been really excited about working again and exploring that those realms.
We'll be back after a message from our sponsor.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
So after the whole Full Cycle and Represent thing, I took some time out and I went back into the books. Really, I started studying. You know, I had, you know, my own issues. You know, growing up where I did and family life and stuff. So some things came to the fore, Graham, that I wasn't able to resolve by myself. So I went and got coaching and mentoring and, you know, spiritual counselling. And really got involved and started to really enjoy the process of learning it as well, which I wasn't a very good learner in school, but I really enjoyed sports and craft. And then when I started to study this stuff, I realized I really enjoyed it. You know, I really got a lot of benefit from it. And so I started to put together like a little workshop, a little course, started teaching people around me or talking to people around me. And then a friend of mine says, yeah, I got this workshop you want you to do. I'm like, oh, I don't know about that. She's like, yes, he's 10-year-old son. Oh, and I definitely don't know about that.
Well, you got to tell a 10-year-old that he don't know, already know.
Yeah, so, I mean, that's where it really started. So my friend Kerry, the MC, thanks for that. She was the one who really gave me the start and helped me get on that road. But what that showed me, it just helped me start thinking differently about everything. And I really started to understand, you know, the story and everything, the emotional content and everything. And so coming back to music, you know, I started to look at the films and how film was really about sort of archetypes and motifs, and how they were really sort of trying to bring you in and get you engaged in a story. And I thought, well, I've really tried to make my music like this journey and bring people into my world. And so let me really dive into that. And so, you know, me and Ronnie started talking again. You know, we've been working together for nearly like 12, 13 years, like a marriage.
So yeah, no, I've been with Fast 20-something years, and Frank 15, 16 years now. So yeah, it's like I have two wives, three wives. What am I talking about?
Yeah, and so sometimes, you know, we everyone went their own way. So I went to London, went there for 10 years, and then, you know, I was itching to get back into music. I was dabbling. I started Rebel Instinct, which was like my I don't even know what it is. It's just like an incubator for art.
Yeah.
You know, it was a label, but I quickly realized that wasn't what it was about. So I was making some stuff under the name George Kurtz. I was enjoying that. But I just, you know, when you just
was that Colonel Kurtz from Apocalypse Now?
Do you know,
everybody's gonna be like, no, dummy, because they have that their Google in front of them. Mm. But there was that book, Heart of Darkness, right? It was Kurtz, right?
The reason why I chose that is because my dad used to call me
really
Kurtz. Kurtz. Like, when he could remember my names, like my dad, like four of us.
So you have a lot of boys in your family, man. Yeah, for real.
Go for everyone's name, and then
you'd be the one at the end. Yeah. You're the baby of the bunch, right?
No, one other younger. Gary's the youngest.
Oh, okay, Gary. Yeah.
Yeah.
I met all your brothers over the years, right? Mm. But there were a lot of them at Becky's party.
Yeah,
they were like showing up, like it was hey, boy.
Yeah, these are the immediates, and we got the other ones as well that are spread out around the world.
That's good. You got to get the Kurtz out there, man.
Yeah. And so after that, really, you know, Ronnie's like, yeah, let's do the label again. I was thinking, well, I feel like I've still got some that, and there's still stuff there that needs to be done. So that was the opportunity, really, to start getting back out there and making music. We did the tour, which was amazing, which is like getting everybody back on the full cycle train again.
That's how the Criminals kind of got back, too. I always thought, you know, like everybody's first record is their life experience up to that point, right? And I think it's similar in the way that I approach music is similar to you, is in the respect that I think I need life to show me what I need to do, you know? And I think a lot of times if we get in that cycle of being a recording musician and then being a touring musician, there's no real time for you to just be you or be off, you know what I mean? It's like where you can actually observe stuff and have life show you what's up. I think going away, and then when we kind of came back, that was 2016, that was our 20th anniversary, that kind of was the incubator, was a great word, to get us back in the studio, being friends, being cool with each other, and having life to tell each other about, you know?
Yeah, and it's a good story as well, because you do have that story arc, and also you have this new equipment as well.
You don't have to worry about 2-inch tape no more, man.
No, exactly. And I think for me, what's been really amazing is really figuring out how to transfer my sound, which was like analog and old school, you know, samplers, to this new world, which was essentially digital samplers. And it was for a while, it was all digital.
Yeah.
And now we're marrying the best of both worlds.
I think that's good. You can have, and also for old heads like us that quantize and do stuff like that. I mean, a lot of times now it's like you can kill like a good half hour of just, like, you know, grunt work, getting your beat together now, which I think is great, because those ideas can come out better. And a lot of people say, oh, it's so easy, anybody can do it. I was like, yeah, but not everybody who does it is good at it.
Exactly.
You know what I mean? You can make great music, and you can make terrible music, and that'll happen if everybody does it or nobody does it. There's going to be that division, right? So I think the computer stuff actually helps people like us, because I know that for me, I don't always want to be in a studio, you know what I mean?
Exactly.
And that's the great thing. You could take your laptop. You could be anywhere you want.
And I think that's great, especially with like things like machine. You got it on your phone or on your pad as well. Yeah. And it's great. You do these sketches. You must have tried this back in the day as well. You'd the first laptop. You'd be on tour trying to make beats on these.
Yeah.
Just wouldn't work with it.
Well, Fast had an Ensoniq keyboard, right? I think it was like an 8-track sequencer.
Right.
But it was didn't have a lot of memory. So he just took that thing with him. Ensoniq was famous for making hearing aids.
Right.
And they were like, oh, but, you know, the guy's son was like, I want to make some sequencers or whatever. So he made like this little Jimmy. He just carried that with him. And by the time we even were making our second record, that shit was already over. Right. But he still had it. It was worth, like, you know, nothing. Right. So we just carried it with us. Right. But yeah, I remember getting on the laptop at first, and you're like, frustrating as hell, man.
I wasn't happening. So I'm like, now it's just, you know, it's really fun. I think I'm in that stage now where it's like, it's fun again.
Yeah.
I think I've got back to a place where I'm really comfortable and happy. Music that I'm making really sounds like a progression of where I am in my life, and I'm really happy with, you know, where I'm going and moving forward. It's just, you know, I'm really excited about it.
Yeah, I could see that, man. I mean, especially like when I saw you DJ a bunch of times, but when I saw you rocking it, especially because I guess it was from back in the day that I met Ronnie, like in Australia and stuff, right, like that. But when you guys were rocking that shit over last summer, and I saw you guys having fun and smiles, and
I feel
like that now when I play. Because I think I, in particular, I don't know if it's about you, but I'm like, you know, this could be the last joint I rock, right? So let's have fun. You know, I mean, I don't know what's going to happen tomorrow. Someone could be like, no, you're out of a job, or we're not going to book you again, whatever. So every time I play now, I have the best time, because it's like, you know, it's really what I enjoy doing most in life.
Yeah.
You know,
I think as well, like, we're really fortunate. Mm-hmm. Like, we have been able to take something that was like a hobby, you know, like just
something we heard in our head, we put in our pocket.
Yeah,
that's unbelievable. That's a great saying. Someone told me that.
That's wicked.
Yeah, what you hear in your head, you put in your pocket, and without doing it in a way that we're embarrassed, you know, like, I don't look at my early work and go, oh man, I shouldn't have done all that pop music. I was doing it on my own terms, which is, you know, very rare now. You don't see people, I guess, able to turn what's in their head and to put it in their pockets. There's a lot of other pockets before it gets to theirs, and a lot, I guess, you know, those incremental you know, diminishments of your idea, because someone says, well, that won't work in this market, or hey, if you did it like this, or if you got an earring or something like that, or you wore these kind of clothes, and then you see a lot of that now, which is kind of sad for music though, man. But the old people, when I say old people, I mean us, right, the people who are come at it from a point of love now, seem to be doing better at it, you know, because I think that's the positive energy, like the PMA, you know what I mean.
Yeah, and I agree. I mean, there's lots of... It's funny you're saying that, because...
I'm not saying it because you were grandfather.
It's funny, because the other day, I clocked it, right? I was thinking, Jeff Goldberg's back.
Yeah.
And I was like, wait, Robert Redford's back.
Yo.
Wait, Kurt Russell's back.
Yo, Liam Gallagher was on, like, I think it was like Radio 3 or BBC 3 television, and it was him in his dressing room making a cup of tea, right? It's the funniest 10 seconds I've ever seen in my life. He's making tea, so, oh, it's fucking great. I can't do his accent. He's like, oh, it's fucking great. Oh, back in the 90s, we had dudes that made tea for us. Shit, I had three dudes. We had our guy over there, our kid. We got this guy dipping the tea. We got this guy putting sugar. Now, you got kids downloading music for nothing.
Yeah.
Yo, and he goes, what do you expect? This is what you got rock stars doing. That's why they're no good rock stars anymore, because this is what you got us doing, fuckers. And it was like, I mean, he's brilliant in a very, like, boiled down kind of way. Because that's how, you know, I wrote that book, right, about rebellion and music, Rebel Heroes, right?
Yeah.
And it kind of, I said it kind of ended with Kurt Cobain, right? Because since then, you haven't seen anybody who's been embraced by the world that's telling the world about itself. You know, usually you have to compliment the world. Oh, you're fucking perfect the way you are. Give me a hug, give me a kiss. That's how people are nowadays. And they're not compelled to be any different, because the money ain't there. And it's interesting how Liam Gallagher put a nail on it right there. We're going, hey, if you're not giving someone millions of dollars for being a rebel, he's not going to be a rebel. He's just going to be an asshole screaming and yelling.
I mean, it is interesting. It's almost like we've been pacified.
But like I said, incrementally diminished. Like, it's happened little by little, where, like, I remember when we were growing up, man, and we're similar of age.
Yeah.
You'd get a record, you put it on it, on turntable, you put your headphones in, you close your eyes, the movie would start. You didn't know anything other than what was given to you on that vinyl. So maybe liner notes, a picture, whatever.
Yeah.
It wasn't like you didn't know everything about the person or the artist like you do now. It's just there's no mystery.
There's no mystery.
There's no magic.
Yeah, that's right. Because the whole thing about what we were doing, it was the exploration.
Yeah.
It was to get up at 9 o'clock in the morning, go to the secondhand store or to the record store and stand in line waiting to get that one 12-inch, or looking through the covers in the secondhand shop. We're looking for the right sleeve. And thinking, oh, maybe there's a break on it.
Yeah.
Like,
exactly.
You know what I'm saying?
That
excitement, you know, I don't hear people talking about that stuff anymore. I don't hear people going crazy about, like, a break that they found, or you know, or this old school synth that's got this weird bass sound on it and stuff. And
But there is that subculture. I mean, I guess it started with those Japanese kids buying a pair of Jordans for $2,000. Right. Man, that just started happening. I've been in Japan. You've been in Japan, I'm sure. And you go there and you see, like, wow, these people really give a fuck about vinyl. Yeah. They really fuck about old guitars, old equipment, you know, like kicks, you know, like all this, like, and it was very nostalgic in the way they were kind of getting on it. But then you see in, like, Sainsbury's around these parts, you see vinyl in them fucking stores now. Yeah. You can buy Pink Floyd The Wall if you want it. Or I saw, I think it was Silk Degrees by Boz Skaggs. And I was like, I don't know if it was there, but I saw that record recently in a store. I didn't think it should belong. I was like, shit, man, that's odd. But vinyl's coming back. You see, like, you can go on Amazon and buy, like, a turntable for $50 now. So that means something's going on.
I think we go around in these cycles. You know, I've always had the idea that we didn't really understand what technology was for, and we've had it, and we've been exposed to it. You know, and so say they took a man to the moon with less technology that
Your phone is like 10 times as powerful.
But what are we doing with the phone?
Yeah,
you know, we're not really progressing. You know, and
we're looking at people's asses on Instagram and talking shit on Twitter and saying hi to your mother on Facebook when you don't need any of that shit. The phone is. You call your mother.
Yeah.
Like, I Facebook my mom because she lives in America, right? That's what I think the invention's for. I carry my phone with me so I can FaceTime my mom. Other than that, I don't really give a fuck. I don't need to know what Donald Trump's doing.
No.
I don't need to know what someone on Twitter's doing or Facebook or, you know.
Yeah. And I think that eventually the shine is going to diminish.
Yeah.
You know, the new toy it doesn't produce the same, you know, satisfaction and the quality of experience will just diminish. Because listen, I love Apple, but the last 5 iPhones, there's nothing different going on.
I mean, if anything, they're kind of like doing dumb shit.
Yeah, it's like, I don't really need another
100 gigs of storage
or another better camera. It's like, you know, I like it, but you know what I mean? It's interesting you talk about the
new iPhone, because I love checking out how people rationalize modern life. It's like one of the things I like, because I think to myself that even when I was a young kid, I felt like one of those old Italian men, you know, with his pants up too high. You know what I mean? Walking around New York, going, hey, you fucking kids are crazy. But I see, especially with what you were talking about, that, you know, when you have like a direct response to, like, the iPhone coming out, and then someone has a George Orwell quote, which is like, you know, it's easy to take over this country because everybody will be looking at their screens. And he meant that's an actual line. They're looking at their screens and not even paying attention.
Yeah.
That's kind of what's going on. I think people are either getting wised up to that or acquiescing to that fact. But I think more people are getting wised up because they're being prodded to think now, which is kind of cool.
Yeah,
you know, being subversive is cool, man. Yeah. You know,
and I think if technology does that, then that's what it's supposed to do, because technology is like the human mind's technology.
Yeah.
The speaker box that the guy who used to be the speaker in the village, that's technology.
Mm-hmm.
You know, writing it down, that was technology. Yeah. So, you know, we're only as good as, you know, the inventions that we have and how we apply them to make our lives better or make our lives convenient, whatever it is.
Remember that girl Hannah? You know Hannah, little Hannah?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
She gave Becky a book for me called The Singularity Is Near. Or no, did she take my copy? No, I think she gave it to me.
Yeah,
by Ray Kurzweil, right? We're talking about keyboards, right? That book is like, he probably was a little ahead of his time, but it's about the moment that technology and biology meet. And like you're talking about, the human brain is technology.
Mm.
It literally will be. You won't actually have a phone. You'll have an implant in your head and your eye that will be able to do shit like that. You'll be able to be kind of plugged in. And that's
transhumanism.
Yeah, and you know, like, you were thinking about the Matrix and all that kind of shit, right? Someone told me that actor who's always getting in trouble for being drunk. He was in iRobot with Will Smith. He's like, he was a kid then, but he was, oh man, he plays John McEnroe in a new movie.
Oh, Shea
LaBeouf.
Yeah, yeah.
LaBeouf. Shea LaBeouf. He had a shirt that said, "The Matrix was a documentary," right? And I think you know, in a lot of ways, I mean, but the fact that we're all so fucking expert at all these things because we have at our fingertips the human beings, man's knowledge throughout the ages. People are going to get smarter. Yeah. I mean, as incrementally dumbed down we are, we're also going to be incrementally wised up if you choose to go that way. Red pill, blue pill, right?
Yeah. I mean, what we're seeing as well, I mean, what technology is really amazing at doing is decentralization.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
You know, and with the, you're probably following the whole blockchain and the cryptocurrency thing. Yeah. That's a big shift, right?
Yeah.
We're seeing this whole movement away from the you know, the ideology that, you know, for me, how I look at it, it's like governments look after people and people want to be looked after. It's like, well, we've allowed this to happen. You know, people are saying, well, what's happened? It's like, well, we've stopped asking questions.
Yeah, well, that's the actual reason why people are bugging out now.
Yeah. It's like, the minute people wake up and take responsibility, and responsibility to some people means blame. It's like, responsibility is the ability to respond.
Literally break the word down again, right? Yeah.
You know, it's your personal power. It's like, you know, when you actually start realizing, you know, okay, if you don't like the situation you're in, you know, and I've learned this myself firsthand. I was complaining about the music. Oh, the music's no good. There's young kids, blah, blah, blah. And I was, hold on a minute, mate. You're doing a lot of complaining. You're doing a lot of complaining. You've got a big mouth right now. You need to just stop talking and start making some music again then. Because you can't tell people to go and do it. You be it. You know, for me, it was a big wake up. Like, oh, you know, I'm part of the problem.
Yeah.
I'm just talking about it. Just sit down and do what you do best. Let that be, you know, your argument. So it's like, what we're seeing now is like, you're right. People are waking up. People are seeing certain things out there that aren't making sense. We're watching the subversive takeover of consciousness when we're watching a war on TV, thinking that it's in Iraq. It's like, hold on a minute, bro. You see, it's going on your screen right now. You think you're detached from it.
No, you're not.
You're actually participating in it. You're not doing anything. You're like texting.
Texting at all, you know.
Hey, you know, we got a problem. Do you know what? Let's set up a Facebook group.
Yeah, let's hashtag our prayers over those people over there.
It's like, come on. It's like, we can do, you know, and I'm not saying I'm this guy's going to show. Like, my thing is, like, I'm going to just do one thing. That's all I can do. And my one thing is, you know, I'm going to make a great song, and I'm going to say something in that song, and I'm going to, when I play out, I'm going to get on the mic, and I'm going to say some fuckeries. I mean, just because I can, right?
Do what you can, man.
And I think that's, as an artist, that's our responsibility, you know, to, like Di schooled me on The Clash. I wasn't, you know, when I met Di was like the hippie kid.
Yeah.
Who was like, he's like, Crush, you know what hummus is? I'm like, I was like, I'm from the West.
Do you know what hummus is?
I don't know how much
we used to have hummus.
I was like, we ain't going to know what hummus is.
Oh, gosh, and I
like
that too.
And so he schooled me on this whole punk rock thing, and like, you know, the whole thing, which I came to understand about The Clash, was like, they were the news.
Yeah.
They
For
were
a
the,
lot of people, they yeah. were bringing the real news.
Yeah. That was international news. And what I got when I used to travel was like, so I left Northwest, which is like, you know, one of the roughest neighborhoods in Bristol, England at the time. Tony Blair said it was the worst council estate in Europe. So I left that.
Good old Tony, man.
I left that now 22, right? When I used to go back, and I used to live in St. Paul's, just where we are now.
Yeah.
So like 15, 20 minutes away, people would be like, what's it like down there?
Yeah, yeah.
And then I used to go to London, right? They'd be like, what's it like in London? When I first left the country, right, they'd be like, Crust.
Tell us.
Please tell us.
Yo, but you know, the thing is, like, before everybody had, like, you know, the world at their fingertips, information was spread through friends and family.
Yeah.
You didn't believe what you read on the news. Mm. I don't know why people do now. But I never believed anything I saw in the news. You believe what your friends and your family told you to your face.
Yeah.
You know? And that was... See, that's why I think we're kind of, like, disconnected from our friends and our family like that, because we have this Facebook shit and everybody's posted pictures of them looking their absolute best in these fantastic places. And I'm like, how's life? They're like, absolutely amazing in this absolutely amazing place. And it's like, oh, really? Okay. And then when you see them, they're not doing that great. And you're like, well, why do you... Yeah. You know? So when you kind of, like, I guess... You know, you're not really living your life with your family and your friends anymore. Mm. You're living it for some kind of weird platform that no one really cares about you on.
Yeah.
That's when I think the disconnects happen with that technology shit.
Yeah. It is interesting, you know. It's, you know, there is a responsibility as well for, you know, people who are in that position.
Yeah. Well, you could tell people what London was like, and they'd probably be like, "Oh shit, really?" Yeah.
And I think that's just the same now, where we can do that. We can just talk more. We can communicate more. And I think it's great that vinyl's coming back, because that linear notes, that's killer, right? Because remember, you'd sit down and you'd be reading that thing for hours.
Yeah, I mean, if it was an interesting band that wanted to put good shit on their liner notes, it's great.
Yeah.
But it's also, there was that sense of magic about, like, I don't, like, who's, someone recently, some Sia, is that her name, this Australian singer? Is that her name?
Yeah.
And she covered her face for like a year and a half and no one knew what she looked like.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That was like the biggest magic thing happened in music ever since, you know.
Yeah.
You know, we were like, I didn't know what she looked like. It was like, wow, she sang really good.
Yeah.
And it was, you know, and now it's just, you know, everything about everybody, and there's no
magic.
It's
too instant. I agree. The mystery is part of the mystery is part of being a kid again, and the wonder and the excitement of unwrapping a present and not knowing what it is, and you know, listening to an album that you haven't heard, so you can just put it on and the crackle starts, and
the burden of art is on you at that point, because it's all about art is about enjoying yourself.
Mm.
That you have to know yourself to enjoy it, right?
Mm.
So when you put on a record you've never heard before and haven't heard on the radio, or maybe you heard a song on the radio, the burden's on you to get the piece of art that the other human being is trying to show you what they got in their world. And now I think a lot of times people, if they don't get it like that first couple seconds, they swipe or they click and then they go to the next thing, so they never actually invest themselves into art, which I think, I mean, that's how I learned about myself.
Yeah.
How did I feel when I listened to this song? Or how did I feel when I looked at that painting? Or how did I feel when I, you know, that's how I got to know myself.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, with that philosopher said, know thyself, because in the end there's nothing else.
Yeah.
The journey that we're on is to obviously enrich the people we love and the people around us and stuff, but it's also the journey to understand from our perspective what this whole shit's about.
Mm, I agree. And I think if that, there's two convergences happening. You know, we're going to be the first 50-year-olds who are going to be the custodians of this tech.
Yeah,
and,
that's true.
And the what we've achieved with it, because, you know, I saw a thing with Arthur Baker the other day talking about Planet Rock.
Yeah,
and like that ain't that long ago.
No, it isn't. That was the first song that I went, what the, is that? What the fuck is that?
Like, that ain't that long ago.
Yeah, he was a guest on the pod, man.
Yeah,
he's cool, man.
Yeah, and then you look at what's happened now. It's like, you know, we're still trying to like better that in a way. You know, we're still trying to better the 70s in a way, and we're giving it a good go.
Yeah, there's some good fun shit going on.
Yeah, and we're capable of understanding like the journey that those cats went on and the experience that it gave us when we listened to it, and now we're making music, we're understanding we can put the best of the tech in it, but we know we got to put soul in it.
Yeah.
We know we got to put funk in it. But it ain't soul and funk we're making, but we're putting that in there.
Yeah, and part of the mix, yeah.
Yeah, and I think what's interesting, what you said earlier about the young kids, is like, I think why vinyl's coming back and people want that experience again, is because that experience, they've been told about it by us.
Yeah,
they want to feel it themselves now. It's like my nephew's got, he's 30 now, when he was 20 something he came to my studio and he went, "Kid, look all the records you got." And I'm like,
"Can I listen to all of them?"
I said, go through and it's like his dad was the reason that I got into the music that I did. So my older brother, I used to sneak into his room and look at the record covers, and one day he came home and said, "Watch this video." And it was Wildstar.
Yeah.
And that was it.
That was it.
Like, me and my little homies, right? We're all 14. We're like, "What's this video, bro?" He's like, he said, "Just watch it."
Yeah.
And that was like, that changed, that day changed all of our lives. And it's like, and I think those are the experiences, like, you know, we can watch YouTube all day and it's great, but there's something about someone giving you a cassette.
Yeah.
Right, and you put it into old Betamax player,
ka-chunk, with all the little static going through.
And, you know, I don't know about you, but in our house, we had to put 50 pence in the TV to get it to work.
Really?
Yeah, I got a meter in the back.
Right? I didn't have that.
So we had a meter, put the money in, man. Don't make sure you got 250 pence to buy the things. So you had to make sure 250 pence is buy the things. If it ran out,
you click out in the middle of the movie.
You couldn't deal with that. So then, boom, we just sat down, we all watched it, and it was like, we got to do that. And that was it. It's like, we need to do that. And so if...
Well, you started really young making music though, right?
I started, you know, the B-boy thing started when I was 14. Mm-hmm. Before I was listening to electronic music, mm-hmm. you know, I listened to the pop stuff, Duran Duran, you know, Flock of Seagulls, Tears for Fears, mm-hmm. you know. When I was 14, Wildstar came out, and I was like, left school at 15, Wild Bunch, Massive Attack was just kind of blowing up. You know, we used to go to St. Paul's Festival, that was like a big thing for us in Bristol, so, you know, my dad used to take us to that when we were really little. You know, you'd walk around, you'd hear the sound systems, you know, and it was like, you know, oh, wow, man, you know, what's this? And then, you know, there was always music in the house, so we always like,
because all your brothers had stereos in their rooms.
Yeah. You know, Sundays though was the day.
Yeah.
So Sundays was like Motown, Dionne Warwick, you know, mm-hmm. you know, Stevie, and you know, my mom would be singing the songs, cooking Sunday dinner, and you know, we'd be running around the house. I always remember Sundays was family day. You could go out, but you had to be back at 12, and you and then you'd sit in. You know, you'd sit in and watch like the Sunday matinee, right? And then you'd turn the TV off, and then you listen to the charts. So it was a countdown show. So we everybody would be listening to the charts, and we'd have our cassettes, right?
Ready to record. When you heard your jam,
here it comes. He's gonna be in it, and you record it. And like me and Flynn used to take it in turns, learning how to scratch with the on-off button between the tape and the turntable. That's how we learned to scratch.
I wish you had one of those combinations. I have 8-track in mine. Go-gong, go-gong.
So you go like...
Whose record were you scratching? Yeah, that was the thing, man.
Listen, my mom keeps saying, when your boy's gonna buy me my stereo back? It's like, well, I promise I'll get you one. And so that was the investment, you know. So, you know, for me, I'm like, you know, I feel like that I want to do something like that for the next generation. Yeah. You know, making vinyl, and I'm very lucky that, you know, I've got a
vinyl
store actually.
Thank you, man.
I'm lucky that I've been able to be a part of that whole thing in the beginning, making vinyl.
Yeah.
And like now it's coming back. So I'm.
Hey, yo, can you do me a favor? Can you sign this to Bo? Because I'm getting him a record collection, literally. Yeah. All the people I know that give me vinyl, I'm like, yo, put this to my boy, because he can't throw shit out that got his name on it. So he can't be like, oh, I don't know this record yet. I was like, you will. Mm-hmm. I had Booker T. Jones to do one, and he was like, and Dennis Coffey, you know that dude, the guitar player from the Funk Brothers. So he wrote one. He's like, I'm a grandfather, so I write what I mean. He's like, Beaumont, learn to play guitar. Dennis Coffey. I was like, wow, awesome.
I gotta find a marker that can write on this.
Is this a marker?
Oh, actually, you know what? Let me
swap
this for a white label, innit?
Oh, yeah, because you can do it with just any pen.
Yeah.
That's cool vinyl, too, man.
Yeah
so. Is this the
that
new single?
That was an unreleased track that Dom from Dubs in the Dungeon. So he was like, yo, Crossman, I heard you got this track. That he actually said, like, you know, he heard that track, Flip It, and said, have you got any other tracks that never came out? I was like, oh, never look.
That's cool because that's the thing. I mean, people come to you when they want to hear a certain type of experimental, but yet grounded new kind of music. Are you saying like you don't like you're always trying to go for the new thing? I think that's great, but you have definitely one foot in the future, you know what I'm saying, like in space. You still have you can still access planet Earth, which I think is sometimes important, because if you're just completely out there, music isn't grounded to something, people kind of go, oh, it's like Philip Glass. You ever listen to that dude? He's great, but you're like, you got to be on the next level type of mentally to be able to listen to him.
You're so right as well, because what I realized is that when I was making all those big epic tracks, these 12-minute tracks like Soul Emotion and Future Unknown and that, it was taking me so long to make them. You know, like a week of sampling, a week of editing, like a month just to make one track. And this time around, I thought to myself, you know, how do I make this process quicker? How do I systematically work in a way that it's, you know, it's not like a conveyor belt, so I don't want to make my music sound, you know, too accessible in the sense that, oh, it's easy to do. There's a process behind it. So what I've worked out is really a way to just get to the point quicker. And I think that's what's really good about all this new tech. It's allowed me to do that. I mean, I used to sit down and like with a DAT machine and a synth and a delay box and make sounds like for 2 days, like one change, and then you'd have this like that 90 minute DAT with like 6,000 bass sounds, like with like one fraction of a thing changing.
The modulation degree of five.
It was nuts, and so
0.5.
It was very stressful going back through it.
You know what we should do? Okay. We should do part two though soon, right? Yeah, that's me and DJ Crust at the Crust Studio here in Brizzle. Part two coming up soon. Well, I hope you guys liked that. Kay is a very awesome guy. It was great to talk with him in his studio. And you got to check out his CBD website, amalife.co.uk. AMMALIFE.co.uk. Next up on the pod, it's an awesome dude named Mark Waddington. He's the chief executive of a charity called Hope and Homes for Children, who me and my boys Kenny English and T-Bone recently did a triathlon with Mark to raise money for this amazing organization that helps to place kids in loving homes and not orphanages and institutions. And yo, thank you for all of you who donated. We spread the word on social media and tipped those donations well over the 10,000 pound mark for Mark. Well worth the sweaty pics of me on Twitter. How about them apples? So tune in for that one. And in the meantime, check out the website hopeandhomes.org and, you know, check it out, man. It's good work they're doing. Until next time, my peoples, y'all stay classy.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news ad free. That's amazon.com/news ad free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.